From beach towels to tea towels, and from mugs to water bottles, the TNT shop has it all. Browse our shop now at tntradio.live. Critically analyzing global affairs, this is the Hervoy Moritz Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Alrighty, it's finally, it's Friday, it's the weekend, and I hope everyone is ready to relax a bit. And of course, the biggest news today has been what you've been hearing about. I believe Patrick was just talking about it, the ICC wanting to arrest Putin. And my first response was, what a hypocritical crock. Forget whether you support or don't support Putin. The point is, the hypocrisy is so disgusting. Like, you know, in the end, I don't care if they arrest Putin, but first, if they want any credibility, they would have to arrest many past and present Canadian and American and European leaders for war crimes, for these illegal, based on nothing, wars that have killed millions, you know, Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, Syria, Yemen, even currently Ukraine, you know, all these different Western leaders. If you put them in prison together with Putin, okay, fine. But the hypocrisy, and then the fact that so many countries, not even the U.S., is a party to the Rome Statute, I believe. So what a joke. Dmitry Medvedev responded with a tweet. He said, quote, "The ICC has issued an arrest warrant against Vladimir Putin. No need to explain where this paper should be used. And he includes the emoticon of a toilet paper. So there is that, and some Balkan commentators like Nikola Soldo says that this is one hell of an escalation. It leverages an international institution to which many countries are party to in order to put the squeeze on the Russians, creates all sorts of diplomatic and legal headaches for countries that have not taken sides in this conflict. The potential knock-on effects are virtually infinite. It's an international law minefield. And this development strongly suggests that the neoconservative faction in the Biden White House has the upper hand at the moment." He's referring to folks like Victoria F. the EU Nuland. He also says these charges will have the effect of negatively impacting the legitimacy of the ICC. And one of my contributors, Serbian analyst Nikola Mikovic, posted an article for my Geopolitics and Empire website today, discussing, you know, giving his view on this. He views Russia as weak and Putin possibly ending up like Milosevic. So that, you know, that's his real politic analysis. So I guess we'll just see what happens. But he does say that you can expect the same to happen now to other Russian Kremlin, top Kremlin officials, elites, and Russian generals. So that could send a signal to the Russian elite. We have someone has pointed out that the drone incident is marks the first direct contact between the Russian and United States Air Forces since the Cold War. That's an interesting way to think about this and what's going on. And we have Tedros, the terrorist of the World Health Organization, coming out and saying that the pandemic accord will not give WHO power to dictate policy to any country. So it seems like all the noise we've been making is finally, of course, you know, they are monitoring us, and they're, you know, it's big enough, the noise, now that he's forced to respond to, you know, us knowing the jig, the game. And again, for me, it's like Solzhenitsyn. Like, we know they're lying. They know they're lying. They know that we know they're lying. I don't believe this guy one bit. Come on. They've lied through their teeth the whole past couple of years. Total lie. This guy, there's no way that the WHO power is not going to dictate policy to any country. Totally don't believe these freaks. And many smart people now are saying regarding the SVB banking collapse that, you know, it's to bring in the CBDCs. Not that I thought otherwise, but again, it's perfectly lining up with my view that I've held for many years now. Michael Krieger, who was recently with Patrick Henningsen, tweets, three things are needed to facilitate the rollout of the CBDC system. Make holding money in banks feel completely unsafe. Check. Destroy competitors to make them unattractive as viable alternatives like Bitcoin. Check. Economic collapse, then tie welfare to CBDC. All are in play. Not looking good. And Jacinda Ardern is tipped for a top role in this internet censorship position. She's gonna, you know, she's perfect for that that position. It's called the Christchurch Call. I have no idea what this is, but it's yeah, it's some position where they're going to be, you know, dealing with this sort of stuff. So, and we also had Andrew Bridgen. He gave a speech in Parliament today out there in the UK. He's an elected member. His speech was taken down by YouTube. So, you know, a lot of people freaking out about this, but it's like, get used to it. You know, what do people expect? We are in this world government technocracy. You know, we can complain to YouTube and Twitter, but that's where we are right now. And let me just remind y'all that TNT Radio never goes home. We're committed to bringing you our take on the biggest topics of our time. We broadcast live 24/7 online globally, no matter what, unless Klaus pulls the plug. We've got you covered on TNT Radio.
The news you want.
They cover the important story.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
The FCC took its first ever steps to crack down on text message scams this week, imposing new regulations on mobile phone service providers, citing a surge of consumer complaints in recent years tied to unwanted robotexts. At face value, this all sounds well and good. However, privacy experts have concerns about some of the language contained within the new rules. Here with the full story, joining me now is TNT Radio News producer Adam Clark, a.k.a. Ruckus.
Thanks, Rory. Who cares about rules? Rules are for wusses, right? Nobody likes rules, but we got some new rules from the FCC. So these were announced yesterday, Thursday, and under these new rules, mobile service providers are required to block certain robotext messages that are considered, quote unquote, highly likely to be illegal. This is basically defined as text messages coming from what they label as invalid, unallocated, or unused numbers, in addition to coming from phone numbers, people that claim to never send text messages, as well as numbers that government agencies and other well-known entities have identified as are not ever being used or are not used for texting or something like that. So an additional FCC rule, this one in particular, we'll talk about in a minute, requires mobile wireless providers to, quote, establish a point of contact for text senders or have providers require their aggregator partners or blocking contractors to establish such a point of contact, which senders can use to inquire about blocked texts. The FCC is further proposing requirements for mobile service providers to block texts from entities the FCC has already cited as illegal robo-texters. One idea that FCC is considering would apply the quote-unquote do not call registry to text messages, blocking messengers from using either method of communication to contact people on that restricted list. The FCC has another proposal to close down what it called the quote-unquote lead generator loophole, which allows multiple marketing firms to deliver robocalls and text messages based on a single instance of a consumer's consent to receive marketing messages. The regulatory agency said this lead generator loophole allows companies, quote, to use a single consumer consent to deliver robocalls and text messages from multiple, perhaps thousands of marketers on subjects that may not be what the consumer had in mind, end quote. The new FCC rules and proposals against scam texts come as consumers have expressed increased concern over robotexts. I can attest to this. They are growing. According to the FCC, there has been a more than 500% increase in robotext complaints in recent years. You heard that correct. Such complaints reportedly rose from about 3,300 in 2015 to about 18,900 in 2022. According to RoboKiller, a firm that provides scam blocking services, there were more than 225 billion robotexts received in the United States in 2022. That in number marked a 157% year-over-year increase and a 307% increase from 2020. RoboKiller estimates that consumers lost more than $20 billion as a result of these scams in 2022. So that's the reasoning behind this. Now, here's the concern. While the new FCC rules are ostensibly aimed at curbing a rise in scam text messages, the portion of the new FCC rule that requires wireless providers to, quote, establish a point of contact for text senders, end quote, may impact the privacy of phone users who wish to maintain their anonymity. The Electronic Freedom Foundation, EFF, has raised concerns about law enforcement agencies using cell site simulators, also known as stingrays, to track people attending protests using their phones. And in a 2020 article, The Intercept described using a prepaid phone service with a carrier that doesn't require personal identification as a way of maintaining anonymity at protest events. The FCC's rule requiring a point of contact for each text sender could potentially eliminate the anonymity afforded to protesters and others who use prepaid phone services. So, Hervory, it sounds like the better mousetrap is being laid here. What do you think?
So they solve one problem and create another. And it's becoming harder and harder to, when it comes to the whole, you know, cell phones and privacy and internet, and it's getting harder to protect, to stay anonymous, to protect yourself from the globalists and from the algorithm ghetto, as I call it. And there are still, I guess there still are some options. Like when I was living abroad, well, I guess I am abroad from your perspective, but I did purchase on an airplane once. They sold some sort of international SIM card, which seemed kind of cool if you don't use the phone a lot, but you need a number. You know, you could purchase this international SIM card, which I guess you can use in any country. You could maybe just use Wi-Fi and not have have a SIM in your phone. Some people do that because now you get Wi-Fi all over the place. Satellite, you can get a satellite phone where you don't have to deal at all, you know, with the cell towers and that sort of thing. It's more expensive, but it's not, you know, it's relatively reasonable monthly fee, but there still are some options. But if you follow people like Rob Braxman and others, it's getting more and more difficult. Many countries are bringing in these, you know, what's going to be the next step? They're bringing in registries, you know, biometric registries. They've tried in Mexico, the government. Luckily, we had a few good men and women, a few good justices or judges that pushed back. But other countries have made it mandatory. So you can't own a number anonymously or buy prepaid anonymous phones. I'm of the view that it's inevitable at some point, and then we'll just have to switch to like satellite phone or something else. But this point of contact, they're going to have to then, I guess they'll be able to know or identify you or get closer to knowing who is the owner of the SIM that wants to send text. What do you think?
Well, I'm of the belief that it's all fake and that no matter what we think, no matter how private we think what we're doing is and how anonymous it is, it's not. That they're able to track every single thing we're doing and everything about us. I think it's kind of a non non-starter for me. I don't believe that anything you do to your phone, even, you know, whatever, I think that they have, they're so far advanced with the way that they track people. I don't want to sound like a conspiracy theorist because I can't recall what it was or when, but it was some years ago. But I remember seeing some, like, supposedly top secret, declassified, whatever, I don't know, documents from the government from some time ago, apparently the documents were, about how they can literally track your unique biometric identity. Like, each of us has, like, a unique bioelectric signature, like a unique fingerprint, and they can feel that, track that, just from us walking through, like, things like the internet stuff all around us, all this Wi-Fi soup that we're walking around in and all that stuff all the time. And this was before, like, 5G. I think they were talking about they could do this, like, based off of our interaction with, like, the EMF coming off of power lines, if I'm not mistaken. It was, like, kind of an older document, but they could sense us walking around like a spider does when you're walking around in a web, right? And you know, what is the internet? It's the World Wide Web, right? So I always say my preferred form of contact, Herbori, from this point forward is two tin cans connected with a fishing line. Thank you very much.
I prefer Messenger Pigeon, but Ruckus, embraced the conspiracy theory. There's, you know, there's nothing wrong in being called a conspiracy theorist. Although, you know, soon the DHS is attempting to criminalize, you know, you might be thrown in a jail if you're termed a conspiracy theorist. All right, we got a great guest coming up. Feel free to dial in if you want to call, and we'll be right back after this break.
Mark Morano on TNT Radio.
What does that tell you when one side of the debate doesn't actually want to address the merits of an argument, but they want to smear, slander, cancel, defund, and deplatform anyone who challenges their narrative, so to speak?
It means that they have no interest in the truth and they have a political agenda and they promote it with propaganda.
So tell me a little bit about why you feel you're uniquely qualified to write this kind of a book.
I feel that I'm qualified because I spent 2 years writing it, and there are 800 footnotes. So if anyone disagrees or questions where the information came from, that's fine. By the way, I'm only a student. I didn't do any of these tests. I just read about them. And most of all of the information comes directly from the U.S. government. If we actually look at what the NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and the EPA and NASA, what they actually found when they did their studies, everyone would agree with what we're promoting, that there is no problem. There's no problem with global warming. There's no problem with the seas rising or accelerating. And all of the other claims are just totally false.
The Mark Morano Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
This is a message for the parents of young children in the United States. I am Dr. Tess Laurie from the World Council for Health. Please consider the danger of vaccinating your children and babies with the COVID-19 injections. They are not the same as traditional vaccines and are causing significant harm to children around the world. Your children have their whole lives ahead of them. They are not endangered by COVID at all. Please hear us when we say, for your children, it is much safer to wait. Thank you.
We don't talk at you.
Blah, 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 blah.
Shut up! We talk with you.
What do you think of this idea?
Let me tell you this.
What's wrong with this picture?
From government overreach to the global pandemic, TNT Radio invites you to join us as we separate facts from fiction, truth from propaganda, day in, day out. Call the open line anytime. In the U.S. and Canada, call 1-888-201-6425. In the U.K., call 033-024-1026. And in Australia and New Zealand, call 1-800-670-310. Free speech has a home on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
All right, we've got a great guest, and especially if you're a U.S. citizen, you're going to want to check out his resources. Brandon Joe Williams is a state national of California, author and common law lawyer, founder of the Amnesty Coalition, a group that aims to address the slave state framework that is created by webs of legal contracts and documents like birth certificates, social security cards, and the U.S. citizen fraud system. After a successful career in sales and marketing, Brandon is now devoting his full-time work to research and experimentation and becoming a state National and writing his third book on martyrdom and escapism. He's also the author of Don't Be a Slave to Your Clients and Love is a Battery. Welcome to TNT Radio, Brandon.
Hi, guys. Thank you. Thanks for the awesome introduction. I appreciate that.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. And I mean, I'm just starting to go down the rabbit hole of your work. I've seen some stuff in the past, you know, like, you know, years ago looking at this stuff, and I'm going to do a deeper dive. And I know you have colorful language, if you could keep it just to a minimum, no big deal if it slips out there, but I'll let you direct us to your website. What's your website?
It's onestupidfuck.com. I won't say it there. How about that?
Okay, yeah, that's fine. So, I'm still trying.
Yeah,
to
a lot understand. Of strong language, but it's all my whole brand is very fun and light. But it seems maybe at first like it's very heavy and weird and antagonistic, but it's really not. So,
yeah,
kind of a weird combination, but I like it. So, and my fans love it. So.
Yeah, I personally don't like to curse, but I don't have an issue if you other people do. And I'm trying to understand sort of a bit your story and where you're coming from. And you know, as you mentioned, it is fascinating. It's hilarious. I've been looking at some of your talks and previous interviews. And back in January, a couple months back, I attended Derek Rose's Greater Reset here in Mexico, and there were a lot of folks, I think, that think like you. They even use some of the same terms. Like I heard you mention kings and queens, and I don't know if you know David Rodriguez. He's in California. He's a voluntarist. But I met a lot of folks sort of using the same language as you've been using. And you talk about this slave state and exiting the matrix. And if you want to maybe to start, tell us about, you know, what is this matrix or slave state?
Yeah, I've had a lot of people tell me the same thing. I looked this up 10 years ago, or I saw this 20 years ago, and then I always hear the same thing. I hear either A, I couldn't find any information on it really, or B, the information that I was able to find on it was just simply way too complicated and I gave up. And to be honest, that was true up until about maybe 2009, 2010, 2011, 12, 13, 14, right in that area. There's a lot of really good books that came out right now. Most people think that the definition of the word research means to go on the internet and snoop around. Now, the problem with this area is up until probably the past year, couple of years, it wasn't going to be so good. I was not able to find anything on the internet about any of this. So I went and bought tons and tons and tons of books, and I read dozens of books. And then while I was reading dozens of books, there was some material that was released during that time period, which I started to consume. And now here we are in 2023, and now there's a whole lot more information available about all this on the internet now more than ever. So, you know, it's one of those things where if you weren't interested in actually physically reading books and digging around a little bit off the internet, you weren't going to find hardly anything at all. And if you did, it was going to be extremely difficult and convoluted. So for all the people who are out there, tons and tons of people, including some of the people I work with the closest, they did find this information 10, 20, 25 years ago, and it went nowhere. They tried to get it to go somewhere, and they couldn't. I don't fit that category. I never came across any of this information. I had a particular issue in my life that I was trying to avoid the government from coming down and destroying my company. So that's how I got into all this and studied it in great length. I didn't have an option to fail. I have some very close friends who work in the company. So, it was a do or die scenario, which has a tendency to push a person into extreme lengths to do whatever he needs to do to make things work. But basically the real simple thing, I like to start everyone where I started. And I assume, not out of an egotistical point, but I assume that where I started and what I found to be like holy, extremely shocking to the point where it fueled everything I've ever done to this day. And I tested a lot on other people and they agree with me. It's the most shocking yet most easy to understand part of all of this. The legal definition of the term United States is only and exclusively the District of Columbia. It does not include the 50 states of the Union. It never did since 1871. And United States is a term that no one understands the definition. So it's so funny. It's like waking up one day and realizing that you don't know the definition of the word car. It's so basic and it's so simple. And when someone just takes a moment and they show you the proper definition of United States, and I'll go ahead and just tell everybody where you can find that. You can find that by going onto Google and typing in 28 space USC space 3002. USC stands for United States Code. You're going to hit enter. You're going to click on Cornell University. You're going to scroll down to section 15. It'll say United States is defined as, and then definition A, it says a federal corporation. That means the District of Columbia. And then the second area you're going to go and look at is UCC, which stands for Uniform Commercial Code. You're going to type into Google UCC and then 9-307. You're going to click on Cornell University again. You're going to scroll down to section H, and it's going to say location of the United States. And it's going to say right there, black and white. You can't miss it. You literally can't even mess this up unless you're so emotionally upset by this information that you twist the information out of some sort of emotional defensive mechanism, which does happen quite a bit. It says right there, the location of the United States. The United States is located in the District of Columbia. So when you have a W-9 form, like an IRS form, and it asks you how much money did you make in the United States, what they're asking you is how much money did you make in the District of Columbia? And when you dig down this rabbit hole, the way it works is in law, when you were probably 18 years old and you filled out your first W-9 form, the way it works is you elected to be treated as though you live inside of the District of Columbia for tax purposes. Now, it takes about 5 minutes and $0 for you to fill out a particular form and send it in, and you can actually revoke that election. It's very, very simple. It's completely free and it's completely legal.
This is mind blowing, and we're going to have to jump to our short break. We'll be right back.
TNT Radio News.
Are you ready for some awesome news?
Yes. 1, 2, 3, 4.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said on Thursday Israel is not supplying Ukraine with any weapons because it's bound by certain agreements with Russia over neighboring Syria. Roughly 2.5 tons of uranium reported missing from a site in Libya has been recovered by armed forces based in the country's east, just one day after the UN's nuclear agency sounded alarms over the lost material.
God, you're amazing. You're a much better listener than my wife. You're always there for me. I think I may be in love.
Where is she?
It's not what it seems. I was talking to...
Who's the tramp I heard you talking to?
That was my Alexa, sweetie.
Well, she sounds like a tramp.
Fall in love with news and talk all over again with your smart device. Just tell it to play.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
We're back with Brandon Joe Williams. His website is onestupidfuck.com. Check it out, especially if you're a U.S. citizen. And I do want to ask you later about the relevance to other countries. But I've heard this before somewhat. Again, I haven't done a deep dive, and so I'm going to be looking at your website and looking at your resources much more closely. And how did this happen? You know, I was born, I'm from Chicago, Illinois, and you know, you grow up thinking you're just, you know, an American citizen of a nation state of the U.S. Later, you know, I came to the conclusion, oh, it's an empire. America is actually an empire. But aside from that, you know, was this some secret plot from the founding of the USA by the founders? Or is this just how they inadvertently set it up? I mean, like, what's going on here? What's the game?
So after the Civil War, during the Reconstruction, you have what's called the Organic Act of 1871. Okay. During that time period, two massive things took place. Okay. The first and probably possibly even more massive than the definition of United States is the redefining of the word person. So anytime you see the word person, it means a natural human. It means a corporation. It means an association. It means a trust. It means absolutely anything you can possibly think of. So whenever you see the word person, 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 it's on all your documentation for anything you've ever signed your entire life. You don't know what in the hell they're referring to. That definition changed around that same time period during the Reconstruction, during Lincoln, during the Reconstruction of America after the Civil War. And then the Organic Act of 1871, basically, they got rid of the original government of America and they installed an exact clone of the original government, but it's an incorporation. So our entire government is an exact duplication of the original government, but it's an incorporated version of that exact same government, right? And that's why you're seeing things that can, you know, it's controlled. It's a controlled mechanism that was designed to be an exact clone of the original mechanism. It's just that this one is controlled by whoever controls it. And that's the difference, right? So we've had an incorporated, they call it a federal corporation, just like I just explained on 28 USC 3002 subsection 15 definition A. And the word federal is capitalized. We don't know why. The definition of United States is a federal corporation. The F in federal is capitalized. The C in corporation is lowercase. We have no idea why the word federal is capitalized. I'm sure that has some sort of significance. I'm sure I will figure that out at some point. But basically the word federal, when you look it up in a law dictionary, it has to do with like greasing state-to-state activities, such as commerce, communications, etc. It has to do with basically the federal corporation, Washington, D.C., in its essence, is supposed to essentially be some sort of contractor that is contracted on an at-will basis for individual states to hire them, no different than a plumber or a landscaper, in an effort to gain assistance through a consulting contract in an effort to increase state-to-state transactions, essentially. It's about as far as my research has gotten currently, right? Now, instead, what's happened is that all of the original states have been replaced by corporate clones. So State of California, when you see it in all capital letters, that has nothing to do with California. State of California is a private for-profit corporation. It's a sub-corporation of the corporation called United States. And State of California is physically located in the District of Columbia. So when you sign for voter registration and it says, I am a resident, I attest under penalty of perjury that I am a resident of State of California in all capital letters. What you're saying is that I attest under penalty of perjury that I live in the District of Columbia. Now, once you sign documentation that states that you live in the District of Columbia, now they can police you and tax you.
I just got a couple questions. You mentioned it's a private corporation, so I'm following you so far, but then who would be the private then owner of, let's say, the private corporation of this state or that state?
As far as I can tell, the owner of all of this entire incorporated matrix is basically London, essentially. Mm-hmm. And it's actually London Incorporated. It's actually the Crown Incorporated. I don't know 100% on that. I just heard that a few places. I try to stay away from things I can't totally 100% mm-hmm. nail down. I'm pretty sure it's the Crown Incorporated, which would be basically like there's a part of London, which is sort of like a separate country, sort of like how Washington, D.C. is in America. I believe yeah. London is basically the center of the world, essentially, as far as I can tell from my research so far.
That's the most logical, and many guests I've had on have they're pointing to, you know, the British Empire still. Or London or whatever force is there is behind a lot of what's going on. And so I mean, in the interest of time, again, people can go to your website and dig deeper. But so we get what you're saying so far. This is how things are. And I was going to mention, you know, I growing up in the U.S., I got a Social Security. I've filed with the IRS. I got a U.S. driver's license. I've got a U.S. passport. And so now we wake up. We realize we're in this matrix as Americans. And you talk about killing your contracts. And so what and going back and sort of revoking all of this stuff and escaping the matrix, what benefit does that do for one? And you know, if you want to talk about that process as well, what benefit does one get from, and how do you do it? Do you like get rid of your Social Security? Do you get rid of your driver's license, your U.S. passport? Do you stop filing with the IRS? What's going on here?
So once you move, once you inform the, so the definition of United States means explicitly and exclusively the District of Columbia. Okay. So the word citizen, the legal definition of the word citizen, is somebody who gives dominion to someone else in exchange for protection, essentially. Okay. So now you take those two definitions and now you take the term U.S. citizen. Okay. So U.S. means the District of Columbia. Citizen means somebody who gives up dominion over themselves in exchange for protection. So a U.S. citizen is somebody who's giving dominion to Washington, D.C. in exchange for protection. But at the same time, they're saying that they live inside of Washington, D.C. Okay. So when you change that and you say, I'm not a U.S. citizen, I actually have never lived in the District of Columbia in my life. What that does is it changes everything. Police can't really do a whole lot to you. Taxation's no longer a part of your life. And people think, well, what happens about all the protections of the government and that sort of thing? Well, there's actually six different terms that they call people who go through this process. And one of the terms that they use, it's in 18 USC section 112, which is all about foreign governments and foreign diplomats. They call you, one of the terms that they use of the six terms, it's called an internationally protected person. So you still have all the protections of the government and you're actually called an IPP, an internationally protected person. And you're actually given all sorts of additional protections from the government while at the same time not paying taxes or being someone that they can prosecute for victimless crimes. So there is no cons, there's only pros. The only cons is you can no longer vote. You probably could, I've talked about this a lot, you probably still can, but like basically, essentially, you're not really supposed to be able to vote, essentially. And obviously you wouldn't be able to run for some sort of corporate office. People don't understand there's actually two governments in America. There's the American government and then there's the United States government. One is incorporated and the other one is unincorporated. And the unincorporated one still exists. It's just that the incorporated one is the one that has all the ties into the media and everything. So it just seems like there's only one, but there's actually two, and they're both active in America and in the United States.
So, yeah, this is just mind blowing. And is it because I've seen you mentioned, so I guess if you kill your contracts and go through this process, you know, what do you use for driving? Like, do you have a, from the DMV, you have a driver's license and, or
no. So the definition of the word driver is someone who is operating a motor vehicle in for commerce related purposes. Commerce related purposes means that you're actually actively driving cargo or passengers for money in that moment. So for example, if you like the way I set up a lot of my businesses and stuff like that, is the customers agree that when I pick up the cargo, I own it while I'm transporting it. So at the point of contact, it becomes mine. And then once I drop it off, it becomes theirs. It's not, there is no commerce in the actual transport itself. So what happens is there's two different terms. There's the term driving, and then there's the term traveling. And then you also have two other terms. You have the term motor vehicle, and then you have the term motor carrier. A motor carrier can be commerce or non-commerce, whereas a motor vehicle can only be commerce. So when you go to the Department of Motor Vehicles and you have a driver's license, what you're doing is you're saying, I'm in commerce, I'm in commerce, I'm in commerce. But if you go and you actually go to the Department of Transportation website and you fill out an MCSA DOT form, you can actually fill it out in a way where you can get a completely non-commerce, completely private motor carrier DOT number, and it costs $0, and they'll give it to you instantly. It's kind of complicated to get one. I just got mine like last week. You just print up your own license plate and you put the DOT number on the license plate. And then now you're completely outside of commerce and you're driving legally and your vehicle is registered. And then from there, you can just get insurance or do whatever you're going to do. And then you don't use a driver's license, you use a passport. So the passport combined with the DOT number takes you completely out of commerce. You're now in non-commerce. The actual physical street signs on the street are for commerce vehicles only. So the speed limit signs no longer apply to you. The stop signs no longer apply to you. Nothing on the road applies to you at all because you're no longer in commerce and you technically own the road when you're outside of commerce as a American.
This is, again, I can't stop, a mind blowing, and we're going to have to jump to our break. Again, the website is onestupidfuck.com, so you can check out Brandon Williams' resources that he's got there and more on this. And if anyone wants to call in, feel free. We'll be right back after this break.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
I want you to listen to the police chief of Charlotte, Mecklenburg, North Carolina, Johnny Jennings, just for a second.
37 minutes. 37 minutes. I want you to think about how short of a time period 37 minutes is. You're probably going to be in this media room longer than 37 minutes. Your lunch break was probably longer than 37 minutes.
37 minutes, that's how long it took for an EMT who was accused of a sexual assault by a patient inside an ambulance to be released back onto the street. 31-year-old Akin Baiwaju Joseph Opadel was in jail for 37 minutes before he was given a $15,000 unsecured bond and was released.
We have to stop sometimes and ask ourselves, you know, what kind of message are we sending to our victims, our most vulnerable people within our society?
Bigger question, what message are we sending to the criminals who know that they can grab a quick nap in the clink and be released to find yet another victim? Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Researcher Elizabeth Woodworth has examined numerous areas of suppressions by TNI with respect to COVID. TNI partners, including Facebook and Twitter, silenced views about a SARS-2 connection to the Wuhan Biosafety Labs before relenting many months later. Other areas of suppression include denial of early treatments for COVID and censorship of health professionals. Those censored include Dr. Jay Bhattacharya, epidemiologist, Stanford University, and Dr. Robert Malone, inventor of mRNA technology platform, and many more. TNI vigorously censored frontline physicians who have saved thousands of lives with early COVID-19 treatments. Dr. Zelenko in New York, Drs. George Farid and Brian Tyson in California, America's frontline doctors founded by Dr. Simone Gold, and the Frontline COVID-19 Critical Care Alliance, FCCCA, led by ICU critical care physician Dr. Pierre Corey.
Not the station for people who label truth as misinformation
just because they don't like it.
For facts and truth.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
We're on our final segment with Brandon Williams of onestupidfuck.com. You can check out his books there, his courses, and basically how to escape the matrix if you're a U.S. citizen. And what you were just talking about, I mean, so I'm guessing if you could give us examples. I mean, so you've been there and done that and confirmed this is all true. Or are there times where people who tried to do this got into trouble, got screwed? You know, past examples that I recall, you know, especially related to the IRS stuff, like I believe there's been great documentaries made which discuss how there's no law, there's no income tax law. And you got like Peter Schiff's father, Irwin Schiff, who was sent to jail. I believe Wesley Snipes tried to do that. He got into trouble. Maybe is there a time where a cop pulls you over and the cop doesn't understand this or doesn't know this and is hassling you? You know, your further thoughts on that.
Yeah, the difference between success and failure in all of this is the difference between being combative and being non-combative. And my people, I throw anybody out. I have a huge, it's growing just insanely. I'm going totally viral right now. I throw anybody out that is just extremely hostile and they just have a bone to pick and they're just pissed off and they want war and they're Genghis Khan. It's like, look, that's fine. Like, a lot of people love that shit. You know, they just love that energy of war and that kind of thing. And I don't necessarily think that's wrong. I just don't want that. And I don't think that's how we're going to achieve success. So I do everything in a completely non-hostile. I talk a lot about Sun Tzu. Sun Tzu talks a lot about build your enemy a golden gate of which a golden bridge of which they can retreat across. Never enter battle unless you know you're already going to win. Know your enemy. One of the things I say to all my fans often is, if you take Sun Tzu's quote, "Know thy enemy," and if you know your enemy so good, if you studied your enemy in and out, what they ate, how they pooped, what kind of women they like, what kind of clothes they wore, why, how they thought, how they think about things. If you studied them to such an extensive degree, would they cease to be your enemy? That's essentially my philosophy.
Yeah, and I would totally agree that you never want to, and I've seen really dumb examples of, now we see, you know, cops especially are trigger happy, and you give them any reason, they'll just shoot, and you always want to be respectful, and it's never the way to go to be combative. But
my brother's a cop. I don't think cops are trigger happy. I think there's a lot of tensions on both sides of the equation, and I think those tensions are created by third parties that want us to destroy each other through divide and conquer techniques. I buy police lunch when I see them, not all the time, but sometimes. I am very kind to police. I keep my hands on the steering wheel. If they pull me over, they never pull me over anymore. But if they did, I would keep my hands on the steering wheel. I would inform the officer if I had a firearm on me, yay or nay. I would be extremely clear on things. I would never subjugate myself, but I would never try to overwhelm the officer. I would try to level with the officer in a neutral way. I think a lot of what we're seeing in the world today is manufactured, so we kill each other. And I don't think that a vast majority of police are necessarily out with a bone to pick. I think some of them, many of them, may have a short fuse, meaning if you approach or begin an interaction in a very hostile way or antagonistic way, I think a lot of people are not aware of how much antagonism and hostility they have in their tone of voice or subliminally. I think there are a lot of issues on both sides of the equation. I think the actual cause is a third party cause, and it has nothing to do with police or the people on the other side of the equation, the individual people.
Do you think this, the system that you described that's set up in the U.S., because I'm actually, I guess you'd call it a slave or whatever of three countries. I've got three citizenships and passports, United States, Croatia, and Mexico. Do you think this is the similar system in other countries?
It's not quite that simple. There are five different types of passport here. So I'm assuming it's the same in other countries. People just don't know. Nobody knows. Nobody has any of this information at all. Like the information on my website, if you spent a month digging around the entire internet, you'd probably find a small percentage of it. And the reason why is because my website is a central hub of everything I've been able to find. And then what I do is I melt it all down to Beavis and Butthead level, or at least as close as I can get to it. And it's all like a big joke, and we talk about jamming cucumbers up your ass and all this goofy stuff. And I did that on purpose to try as hard as I can to make this information available to anyone. And I'm like, well, hey, I'm digging around everywhere under the sun, moon, and stars to find all this stuff. And now I have tens of thousands of people who bring me stuff. All I do now I sort of look at it like, okay, you have a giant park like Central Park. And imagine Central Park just has a giant puzzle in it. It's just this giant, you know, 2 mile by 1 mile puzzle, basically, right? And you have all these little pieces, and you have this like pre-organization center. And I'm like, okay, I'm pretty sure this puzzle piece is probably going to go way over there at some point in the future, blah, blah, blah. So basically we're just putting together this like gigantic 250 million piece puzzle. And we have these different teams of people that are all researching, trying to dig up puzzle pieces. And then we have a pre-organization center, which is like, where do we think these brand new pieces will go at some point in the future? We have these little corrals, and then you have the puzzle. So it's basically like a three-part system, essentially, right? So my job is, I kind of am like over top of all three sections, and I'm trying to figure out which puzzle pieces need to go from the corrals straight into the puzzle, and how can I dig up additional puzzle pieces and put them into the corrals. And that's essentially all that we're doing, really. I mean, it's not anything crazy. It's not anything illegal. It's not anything weird. In fact, by the words of the law themselves, we're probably one of the most legal groups on the entire planet. Ironically enough, none of us pay any taxes, but we, all of our papers are completely in order to make that happen completely legally. So it's a very interesting situation. A lot of us don't have driver's licenses. A lot of us don't have license plates. A lot of us create money out of thin air. That's a whole nother deep rabbit hole that I'm currently doing a lot of work on, and so is a couple of close friends. So it's actually more legal to do what we're doing than it is to do what 99.9% of people are doing. It's actually, you actually have to sign under penalty of perjury that you live in Washington, D.C. to even pay federal income tax. It's perjury. It's up to 1 year in prison to lie on these forms under penalty of perjury. To sign a W-9 form when you don't live in Washington, D.C., to sign a W-9 form or a passport form stating that you're a U.S. citizen, that's 1 year in prison. You're a felon.
This is crazy. We got 3 minutes left. And you know, what would you say are the major benefits for someone who wants to do this? As you mentioned already, you don't pay taxes. You feel freer. What would be like the key benefits?
So the definition of license, when you look in the law dictionary, Black's Law, the definition of license is permission to do something that would otherwise be considered illegal, right? Now, when you leave Washington, D.C., you don't need a license to do anything. You can own belt-fed 50 caliber machine guns. Now, keep in mind, if you were to take that belt-fed 50 caliber machine gun and start walking down the street in California, you'd probably get shot to death. It doesn't matter if it's legal or not. But the real truth of the matter is you don't need a license to do anything. You don't need a license to transport yourself. You don't need a license to, you know, a lot of people don't realize marriage license. When you get married, you're literally getting the definition of the word license is a permission to do something that would otherwise be illegal. It's illegal for you as a slave to get married. I mean, that alone should jar enough people awake to be like, well, wait a second. Holy shit. Like, wow. Yeah. Marriage license. Oh my God. Like, I'm literally getting a license to get married from the government. It's so crazy. So it's one of those things where, you know, I like to push on the definition of United States. I like to push on the marriage license because I feel like these two areas are the most, like, when you show someone the evidence, it just cracks them wide open like an egg. I mean, how could you not want to inspect this farther? It's so intense and so obvious and so clear that something is seriously wrong here. And you know, what I do and all the people that I'm involved in, we focus very, very heavily on definitions because I've found that the definitions, every single subsection in all of law has a definition section. And no one really looks at the law, and doubly no one looks at the definitions. The definitions are where all the secrets lie.
Mm-hmm. Brandon, we're about to run out of time last minute left. If you want to tell us again, the website and you know, what services, projects, resources you offer.
Totally. It's onestupidfuck.com. I have a free course. It's called the Contract Killer Course. I also have a full text-based guide, which is right when you click onto the website. You'll see everything. It's all set up quite nicely. It's a lot of text, but it's clear.
All right. I'm going to be digging further into this. And yeah, wow. Keep up the great work. Feel free to come back anytime. Again, onestupidfuck.com. Brandon Williams, check out his stuff. Mind-blowing. London, the city of London. It's the British Empire. King Charles III. All right, I'll be right back after this break.